I'm Howard. I'm an alcoholic.
Howard.
A little over 8 years ago, Denise came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and was like a ray of sunshine, and by that I mean she was yellow as a daffodil. One of the few people when they came into for the first meeting was told not to come back to our second meeting immediately. But after she took care of some issues and with her health, she came back with a willingness that you rarely see in a newcomer into coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. And in discovering her sobriety, she's taken on other interests outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, or rediscovered some, gained others. She whitewater kayaking. To her, if you're out kayaking, if you don't do a 360-degree roll at least once, you're not having fun. And yoga, she took up yoga, became an instructor. She probably even instructs instructors now, I'm not sure. But always coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous, to where we're always learning, always giving back. I'm proud to call her my friend, and I'm humbled that she considers me a friend. And I introduce you to Denise Kay.
Good evening. My name is Denise. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 9, 2009. And I do have some notes here, but I'll tell you, when standing up here right now, Howard touched on it, we're whitewater kayakers, my husband and I. And my husband's here tonight, so there's like no pressure, right? So when we're in, and I got that, the palpitations going from when you go to get in your boat, there's, you're in your boat, and it's a single kayak, and we're whitewatering and whatnot. And so you're in a rapid, and you're at the top, and you're kind of looking down, and you don't know how it's going to go, right? And you get somebody in your party, and they'll say, "Huck it," which means get your ass down the river now. But the thing is, there's always safety down below. There's you've got to get in that river, you've got to ride it down, and we're on either the side of the bank to help you out. That's how I correlate my sobriety with AA. That's huge for me because I come in at the beginning too with trust issues, all that stuff. Everything alcoholics go through, it's no different. Tonight I get to, I've got to qualify why I'm up here too. And so for those of you that know, just so you didn't forget, and those of you that don't know me, I'm a goddess. I am a goddess. I am a wine goddess. My name means wine goddess in Greek or Latin or something, but it means full on drunk in English. So I was like on the couch, that type of isolation. I was that kind of an alcoholic. That's where my alcoholism got me. I'm gonna tell you a little bit about my history, blah 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 blah. But I will tell you here right now before. I was born with this disease, and there wasn't too far back, a few years ago, I was thinking, well, maybe I might not be an alcoholic. Maybe I just might be that hard drinker that they talk about in the book. And my sponsor, thank God, she said, well, you know what, you might not be. Let's do some work. And we got really deep in these steps, and I came out of there that I definitely was born with this disease. And so all the problems I've had and whatnot, I wanted to blame it on my alcoholism, and I couldn't. I was born with this. But so today what the program tells me to do is, I've got tools today. And you're going to hear me talk about that a lot, hopefully. I've got tools today that I can pick up, and I'm going to talk about some of those too, so hopefully anybody that's struggling out there, you can pick them up too. So I've qualified myself, and another thing too I think is so important is you know, it's a Saturday night. We're in the 8 o'clock hour, and we're in a meeting. Okay, we're here to celebrate recovery, and I get to participate in my sobriety right now. And believe it or not, you all are helping me stay sober tonight by being here. And I hope, you know, if one person hears my story tonight, then, you know, I've done my job. Bill's got the best, you've got the best job in all of AA, because he knows he has to get the speakers, or you and your committee, they have to get the speakers for Saturday night. And they know a lot of us that have a little bit of time under our belt, we can't say no. We're not supposed to say no. So he's got us. So... although you've asked me a few times, and I haven't told my story before, but I had some stuff going on, and I'll get to that later. But yeah, I just wanted to thank you all for being here tonight. That's huge, and it's huge for me to see you all too. You know, and standing here too, I'm a direct result of what this program has to offer. If you're willing to go to any length to get sobriety, and I'll tell you what, it wasn't easy at the very, very beginning. And like a lot of alcoholics, I wanted to stay sober, but I didn't know how. But I had to pull out. The one thing I did hear in my very first meeting was, keep coming back. That little saying kept me coming back, because that's all I could do. My home group is the Way Group over at Hillside Church, and we meet at 11 o'clock Monday through Friday. And so if you're ever in the area, come on over and see us. But I walked in, and Howard was at my first meeting, and so I walk in, and my husband was there too, and we walk into the meeting, and all of a sudden you hear this collective, Sybil was there too, I think you were, and you hear this collective, because I was you're neon, your t-shirt's neon, but I was that yellow jaundice, sickly, and I remember walking in and. I don't even know what the meeting was about, but I remember sharing, and I remember seeing people like, but I heard that one saying out of everything, it was said, keep coming back, and that gave me hope. That little saying gave me hope, and this is what I hope to, you know, if you're struggling, keep coming back. And again, I'm going to reiterate, so I was born with this disease, and I'm a goddess. So, you know, I have a double whammy here. I'm an alcoholic, and so I've got to deal with that, and plus I got to deal with the goddess. Well, you know, I was told, you know, I have one sponsor. I have a network. My sponsor said, I want you to get a network of 5 women, and I do, and I have them. They're on speed dial. So if something's going on, not only do I have my sponsor, I have these women on speed dial. On top of that, I have mentors, many, many mentors. And a lot of you are sitting here tonight. There's got my network, I got my mentors, I got my sponsor, I got my papa sponsor, I got my grandpa sponsor, and the great, great, great grandpa sponsor, is that what you call it? I got my home group, I got my brothers in the home group, I got my sisters in the home group. I've got tools today to pick up when I start getting in that stuff. And so when I started talking about the goddess stuff, they'll say to me, you know what, Denise? They have no problem telling me, Denise, you know, your illusions and delusions need to be smashed. And that means tone down your ego. So they haven't had to tell me that in a long time, so I'm grateful. But it still pops up. So anyway, there's I'll just give you a little bit of my background. The first thing I want to do, though, in the doctor's opinion, this I really relate to this. They said, then there are types entirely normal in every respect except in the effect alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, and friendly people. But basically, it goes on to say, once we take alcohol into our system, all bets are off, and the game is on. And that's me. I started off my family dynamics. Let me it's a little weird here. My parents were fabulous. I had a great childhood. I can't complain about that. But I did notice during the work of these steps and going deep and finding out myself, it's kind of like those therapy sessions, I did find that I was an isolator even when I was a little girl. There was and I didn't mind it at the time. I had a lot of friends and whatnot, but I still was that isolator. And I think it had to do with some of the family dynamics in the house. My father is definitely not an alcoholic. He's that type of person that can pick up a beer and, you know, nurse it all night long. My mother, I cannot call her an alcoholic because she's not here to defend herself. She was a fabulous lady. She's passed on now. She's a fabulous lady. However, she came from a family that her dad was a heavy drinker, and he was violent. And so she came from that dysfunctional family. And what happened was a lot of that came onto us. You know, and it was more like the rageaholic or the idiosyncrasies of having everything just right, just so. And it's funny because I find a lot of my traits are now their character defects are a lot like my mom. But the thing was, I realized too that she just didn't know how. She was never taught that. Another thing in our family too was we got along great. The family unit was fine. But we weren't a very touchy-feely family. You know, we're not a lot real big on hugs or kissing or anything like that, or, you know, I love yous. That came later. That came later when we were about, when all us kids were getting ready to leave the house. And but I found that today I have a hard time with that. And that's one of those things that I work on today. So, and that's just part of how it goes. I have an older brother, Michael. Mike died of this disease, and I'll touch on that a little later. My sister, I have a younger sister, her name is Lisa, and she's not an alcoholic. She's not an alcoholic. She's a fabulous nurse, as a matter of fact. And so being a little different when I was growing up, this was another one where they said, the family, the aunts and uncles would say, so Lisa, what do you want to be when you grow up? And Lisa wanted to be a nurse and a mommy. And she's that. She's a nurse and a mommy, and she's also a grandmother. My brother wanted to be a firefighter, and he wanted to be a truck driver, and he was. And he became also an electrician. So, and then, so the family would say, so Denise, what do you want to be? And of course, being the goddess, I wanted to be a nun, and I wanted to be Mick Jagger. That's what I wanted to do. So, you know, so you see the family kind of going, oh, God, here we go. So all I could think about was, so there you go. And I proceeded to try to be Mick Jagger, but it didn't work out. But anyway, so they talk about, too, we need to kind of, when the first drink was, I had normal childhood, like I said, and I was really creative. I was did a lot of art. So, and then I took a lot of art school, you know, and it was in high school. I didn't do anything really crazy in grade school. I would say my first drink was when I was probably about 15. And, I'll back up just a tad. My very, very first sip of anything was probably, I don't know, 8 years old. And my parents had a party or something. And it was that classic of you know, trying to see what was in the cup because it was a pretty cup. So I go to take a hit and there was a cigarette butt in there. And that cured that for about 15 years. So, and I was like, ugh, obviously. So there was no effect there except like almost ready to puke. So we go through life and I hit my first drink, you know, and it was in high school. And about that time, too, I still got the isolation I wanted to be different. We all want to be different. You know, they talk about that, our uniqueness. And of course, I still wanted to be unique. The goddess part, you know, I needed more. I needed more. And I have a disease of more. I want more. I want more. And so we would all go out, and everybody wanted to go to the bars and whatnot and dancing. And I wanted to go to concerts, man. And they're like, you're crazy. So, but I would. I would go to the concerts. And I would, I've seen a lot of shows, man. You know, like our house band when I was growing up in Connecticut was the Ramones. So, you know, I'd meet them afterwards at the bar, and I'm all bloodied because I'm in the circle, you know, and jumping off stages and stuff. And they're like, well, you know. And the other thing too, Howard touched on it too, just trying to be unique. We were all in the exercise programs and whatnot, and I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm going for yoga. And I didn't know nothing about yoga. All I could think is some hippie shit, you know. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. Well. Thank God. That was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I'll talk, well, he touched on that. And my yoga practice actually helped save my life when I was going through some of the stuff that I went through. And so, so being unique was okay until, the drugs and alcohol came in. Now, I'm unique too because I'm from Connecticut and I'm born and raised, and I'm not a Yankee. I'm a Southern New Englander. And so there was a speaker that was talking the other night, and he said, "Yeah, my father was one of those Northern Yankees, and my mother was a Southern Baptist." And I'm just cracking up. I was like, "That's a Yankee." I was like, "No, I'm a Southern New Englander." I miss Connecticut, but you can't live there anymore. It's too expensive. So we go through the. I'm just going to touch on the drug stuff. It's part of my story, but I'll tell you what. It's not. I'm that much of a control freak that. We did do some stuff with plant matter, I was like this OCD person, and so they would the kids would buy like their nickel bag or the dime bag, and they'd all chuck their bags at me, and I would clean it, and I would pull out stems. There was no pop in, no nothing in my. The other plant matter. So they would, so I rolled more than I actually smoked. And I did trip a few times, and all that. But I'll tell you what, I could trip a hell of a lot better if I was drunk. And I'll tell you what, though, the only reason, I mentioned this one time in a meeting, I was talking to my one of my grandpa's sponsors, and I said, well, drugs, I never had a problem with drugs. This was a turning point in my sobriety. And he said, yet. You're eligible too. Now, I'm an alcoholic. I don't know. I gotta watch it with anything I do, and so that's always stayed in the back of my mind. And you'll hear me say that a lot too. Yet, because it just hit me. So anyway, we get moving on. And drugs and alcohol. It was easier to get alcohol then. Mm-hmm. So that's being the isolator too. And of course, when you get out of a Ramon show and you're beat this to hell, you want a drink. And so I would have a few. It helped the pain. So we would, and it rocked on like that for a while. And then the other turning point was when I got married. Tom and I got married, and all of a sudden, the next thing I know, we're moving to Georgia. Now, I'm a goddess, and I'm living in Southern New England. And all of a sudden, there's, that thing of love, and you fall in love, And I had to follow him wherever he went. And so, where'd you get your job, Tom? Georgia. What? I didn't even know where Georgia was. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And okay. Oh, and then I was thinking, this is going to be a great adventure. However, knowing this was happening, all I could think of, too, was, and I was nervous and all that. We'll just have a couple more drinks. Just start having a few more. I start with that, that rocked on too. That rocked on. And I get to Georgia and I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I doing here? And I realized too, after doing a lot of stepping, I had to step this stuff out, was I had lost the familiar. All my family was up north. I had no, no safety net down here. And it was just Tom and I. And I did get a job, thank God, because that helped with the time. But I had no tools, and I had no good orderly direction. I had nothing, or so I thought, okay? That was part of the, there was another thing, too, I wrote down. I was starting to get restless, irritable, and discontented, because when you're in a place and it's all new, I still want it my way. And I knew it wasn't going to be like that, especially down here, it's tough. So, I realized, too, I'm not good with new stuff. I have to really, it has to sink in me. But today, of course, I had to, with the tools that we've got today of the program, one of my these are the principles over here that they put for the steps. And everything I put for these steps, the spiritual principles behind it, mine is usually willingness. I have to be willing, okay? And that's and I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know. So rocked on like that for a long time, and I was in a, I had a really good job and whatnot. And then I found a better job, and it was the job of my dreams. I was I was helping a lot of people, and this was about 2005, I guess. And I got laid off, and I got mad about that. I was like, geez, you know, I'm a good worker, and this and that, that and this. The fact of the matter was, they had closed that particular department. But that was my safety net, and so now I have nothing, and I'm restless, irritable, discontented, and angry. And so, you know, naturally I'm going to drink, and that's what I did. And I started drinking even more. At this point in time, there's, the drinking just escalated. I told, this was a classic too. I was like, it was around the holidays. I said, well, I'm going to just collect. And then at the beginning of the year, I'm going to go and get a new job. I never did that. And that was probably, for me, that was one of the worst things to do, because I lost responsibility. And we don't have children. We chose to get kayaks instead. So, and beagles. We got beagles too. So, so there was nothing. That was all I had, because I didn't, you know, I didn't grow. And I certainly wasn't growing spiritually, because I didn't know how. So I'm rocking on like that, and I had no. Then the feelings of uselessness and self-pity start in. And a few months later, after that, about 2006, my mother died, and that rocked me, because it was sudden, and it was one of those. It was a real turning point, because this is where my drinking went 24/7. I'm in despair because of mom's gone, and you have to deal with all that, and I'm laid off. You know, I don't have a job. Blah blah blah. And so I heard, this was a perfect storm, man, and it's brewing. And I heard this one saying, and it was on, I don't know if it was a commercial or a song or whatever, but I heard, well, it's 5 o'clock in the world somewhere.
Absolutely.
And which means start drinking. It was on. And I did. I took that literally. And so with all that comes, you know, I was one of those blackout drinkers. You know, it didn't matter. I would pass out, brown out, green out, black out, you name it, I would do it. I'm the type of drinker, too, that I would try to brush my teeth, and I would gag. And next thing you know, I had the heaves. And it would just keep going on and on and on. And I didn't know, and I still wouldn't admit that I had a problem. I knew, oh, it might be something. All I need to do is stop eating saltines and eat like a piece of fish or something, and you'll be fine. You know, I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to look at myself. So about this time, Tom worked a lot out of town, and so he came home one day, and he says, well, you know, since you're home all day, all week and whatnot, he goes, maybe you might want to cut the grass. And I'm like, are you kidding me? God says don't cut grass. I'm thinking, sure, I'll cut the grass. Well, and then, so there was a flat tire, and I said, I'm not doing that. I said, I'm not going out there and pumping a tire, you know. And so it was around my birthday, so Tom has to work all week again. He comes home, and I'm late, you know, I'm passed out on the couch again. And he finally says, well, if you get out of your slippers, this is like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, get out of your slippers, we'll go out. I was like, oh, okay, because I know it's around my birthday. And so we get in the truck, and we go down to Lowe's, and we we walk in, and he's kind of, you know, holding on to me, and I walk in, and he goes, and I thought I was getting patio furniture, right? So, and I'm like, this is really cool. So we go in, and I'm going towards the patio furniture, and Tom kind of turns me this way, and he goes, and there's the lawnmowers. He goes, which one do you want? Which one do you want? Well, I took Goddess to a whole nother level, okay? And and then he goes, and he says, and if you pick this one, I don't know, Troy built whatever, and he goes, you can get a nice wagon to go with it, and you can put the beagles in it while you're cutting the grass. So, you know, so I'm thinking, man, you know, it still didn't dawn on me that you know, I'm useless and just I'm selfish, absolutely selfish, and I'm useless. So another week goes by, and I'm thinking, you know, the grass is about this high and whatnot. And so, and I'm drunk, man. I'm lit. And so, I'm thinking, well, damn it, I got to go out and cut this grass. So I get out there and I'm trying to turn this thing on, and I finally get it on. And all of a sudden, I'm like, well, I'm going to need my wine. It's hot out. It's really hot out. And it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm going to bring some wine. I'm going to put some ice in it and whatnot. So I have a, you know, in the house, I had like a nice glass goblets and whatnot. Well, I went out and bought, I had one. It was an acrylic goblet because my new mower has a cup holder. So I take the goblet with the ice and whatnot, and I put it in the cup holder. And I'm driving drunk, man. I'm so drunk that I'm driving this tractor, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And so it had to have been about a good hour. And all of a sudden, I see Tom coming home, and I'm thinking, okay, now straighten up, right? Do you know how hard that is to straighten up? Well, you all know you're alcoholic. So, and you have to do this with like in a matter of like 10 minutes. So I'm sitting there. I'm sitting on the mower. And I'm all proud of myself, and Tom comes in, and I'm like, and he comes, my husband's just like, oh, here we go. He comes in, and he comes walking over to me, and I'm like, hey, you know, look at, and all of a sudden, he comes over, and he says, he didn't say a thing, this was the scary part, and I was like, oh, shit, something's going on. So, and he comes over, and I've got the mower, and I'm looking at him, he leans over, and he puts the hand on the back of the truck, the trailer, and he takes this lever thing, and all of a sudden he goes forward, and you hear, vroom. And I looked at him, and he goes, you know, the grass might get cut a hell of a lot better if you engage the blade. I went over an hour cutting the grass. I was just rolling around the yard, man, drunk. I didn't even cut it. And so... And and it's one of the funniest stories I tell because that's where that alcohol took me. It took me to be that crazy to do that. You know, I never drove drunk I shouldn't say that. In the throes of my drinking, I never got in my car. I tried not to get in my car when I was drinking, okay? I tried to make sure all that was taken care of. As a matter of fact, I would take something and put it on my steering wheel at night because I knew I was a blackout drinker. And there was times when I would wake up in the backyard not knowing how the hell I got there. I would be in another room in the house, and I didn't know how I got there. Thank God we have locks on our gates outside because, I probably would have tried to get out and do something. But that's where alcohol took me. And then it got to the point I didn't care. And for someone that was born and raised to have responsibility and be a good citizen in the world, that was huge for me. But I still didn't stop drinking. It got worse. It only gets worse. Huh, Jim? Yep. He used to tell me that. He goes, it only gets worse. And I'm like, yeah, right. It did. It just got worse. So let me get all that in there. There's one thing I do want to read from the big book, if I do anything tonight out of the big book. This is not a big book study, although I wish it was. I love big book studies. However, this on page 52, they talk about, this was me, you guys, this was me. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply our human problems this same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional nature. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. That was me. That's me. They call these the bedevilments. Okay, they call these the agnostic promises. I didn't have a God then back then because when I was driving around drunk on a mower, and I'm thinking, God help me. But I wasn't saying that. I was saying, oh, if you get me out of this one, I won't do this again. And that's why when they talk about, and I always went back to drinking, always. It was always. So I'm going to, so 2009, so I'm done at this point. We had gone to a party at a friend's. It was 4th of July. And the guy there just said to me, you know, we're going into the hot tub and all that stuff. So, and it's kind of dark out, but he said, he goes, wow, you're yellow. Okay. And we're partying it up, we're drinking, but that stayed in the back of my mind. When we got home, I looked in the mirror and I was yellow. And I couldn't believe how sick I was. You know, at that point, too, if you've ever had, you know, throes of alcoholism, you know, starting DTs, you know, I had trouble sleeping. I didn't sleep. I passed out. That type of stuff. I went to the doctor's for just a physical, and she said, you're dying. You need to get to the hospital. And so they 10-13, the goddess. They 10-13, the goddess. And I'm thinking, what's going on? And they said, and this really, they said, because you're a danger to yourself and others. What? You know, I was that type of alcoholic too. Don't worry about me. I can take care of it. One thing that this program has taught me, I can't do this alone. I cannot do this alone. I've tried. I need you all. I need you all. And I need this program. I get into my first meeting, like Howard said, and I get the collective, you know, and I think what happened was, there was a member of that group later, and she said, Denise, this is after about a year or so, Denise, she goes, you were the poster girl for AA. And, you know, following the program, because, you know, like they say, they have those before and after pictures, and they wanted to, I wouldn't let them take a picture of me, now I wish I did, but because I would show it to my sponsees. But anyway, so it was on, and I got, so my sobriety date is July 9, 2009, and that is where my life absolutely changed. I had no idea I was going to find the God of my understanding in a group of drunks, okay? You all told me what to do. You all got me to get in the middle, and I didn't know how to do that. Charlie B. from the Brown Baggers used to. The hot place was just a little bit different when I came in, and there was some chairs they used to put over on the side, and so I would come in because I was, you know, isolating still, and he would come over to me, and he'd say, "No, Denise," he goes, "That's the lobby. That's the lobby over there. You need to get in the middle. Get in the middle." And they used to conduct their meetings back there, and actually, those the very last by the wall, those tables weren't even there. So he said, "No, Denise, you need to get in the middle." And so did everybody else. They told me to get in the middle. They told me to get a sponsor. I didn't know what that was. Although I'll tell you what, let me back up just a second because it is kind of important. I went. They 10-13, the goddess. And after, I had to go to. I went to detox down at Peachford, and I'll just leave it at that. So I finally get out and I go back to my. So I had a little bit of rehab down there. I was detoxing though, and at this point I'm still shaking. I can't even talk right. My brain's not even working. But the ladies, my group had given me, not just the ladies, everybody from the WAY group, they had given me a big book, which I have now retired because it's falling apart. Quick note, they say that if your big book's falling apart, means the person using it is not. Get the thumb up from my adopted dad now. I'll get into that in a minute. So you'd all told me what to do. He said, don't drink no matter what. No matter what. My papa sponsor is huge on talking about abstinence. Huge. And now I know why. And he would say, I didn't hear this from him, but everybody said, whatever you do, don't drink. And I was shaking. I remember coming in and I'm shaking, you know. And they'd say, Denise, well, sit on your hands. I did it. They said, get a sponsor, and I did. And my first sponsor saved my life. She brought me through the steps, and she was stern. She was stern because I wanted to back out. I didn't want to do these steps. I didn't want to admit anything, okay? But she would say, she would bring me back and say, and they talk about it, you said you were willing to go to any length, and I still was. You know, I'm one of those, if I've got a promise, if I've made a promise, I keep it. I try to always. And so, you know, thank God I had a little bit of discipline when I came in. So because I got through the steps and I had what I kind of call the surface cleaning steps, because she gave me an idea of how this worked. And so And like I said, she saved my life. She gave me an idea. And then that was that, you hear one of my, the people in my circle, she talks about, do you have a taste of that honey? And I did. But I wanted more. I wanted to know how this worked. Because at first I thought you're all a cult. And especially when you did the Lord's Prayer, I'm thinking, oh my God. But I'll tell you what, it was a comfort to me because I was, I knew that prayer as from a little girl, and that always comforted me. The other thing too that saved my life that I've heard was find God in the pause. Pause, you know, and they talk about that in the book. And I do a lot of pausing today. You know, it's one of those things that I'll never do it justice to stand here and talk about the God I have today than the God that I walked in with. Because the God I walked in with was what that little girl God, you know. God, help me find the, you know, my Barbie doll type thing, you know. And I wouldn't. That was a miracle, man. Today, the God of my understanding, I have God on a cable. It's that one of those big cables that they have, and it's steel and it's strong, and I have that connection with the God of my understanding today. And that's only because of following direction. If I was willing to follow some simple directions, you know, there's an outline for life in this book, in literature. And thank God, because finally, this is when I came. I was actually in emergency, and I finally admitted I was an alcoholic. And so that's why the ride was going to be a ride. And that's, I had a spiritual experience. I was going to say sexual experience. that's a whole different another meeting. So we won't even go. That's an outside issue. But, you know, I had that spiritual. What happened was that there was, I'm going through DTs now. I was scared, but I was ready to go out. I couldn't live anymore like this. Restlessness, you know, the everything that the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, that was me, and I didn't want none more of it. I don't think I would ever try to commit suicide, although I talked about it, you know, modelist. Oh, I'm gonna commit suicide. I was too much of a goddess for that. You know, that's just messy, and I'm not doing that. So, but I'll joke about that. But there's a lot of people that have been on that edge, and boy, call somebody. Just call somebody. There's no need. This is why we're all here tonight. We talk about recovery. We're celebrating sobriety. So, anyway, I get the steps under my belt, and a few years later, and I touched on this at the beginning. I got a sponsor a few years ago, and she was the one I said, I'm not sure if I'm an alcoholic. I think I might just be one of those heavy drinkers they talk about. And we went through the steps, and we got deep, and there was some stuff that came. We started off with traditions. She knows a lot about stuff, and I said, will you take me through traditions? Going through the traditions, stuff was coming up for me on the personal level. And I asked her to be my sponsor, and man, she's like, yep, and we took off. And, you know, today I work, one thing, if anybody's in sobriety too, what helped me a lot was having the backup of my husband. He's very supportive of this, of AA, because he used to say, you know, I've got Denise back. One time, so you got to be careful though, because what happened was we were having a little bit of an argument, and I'm getting heated, you know, because I'm a goddess, I can do that. And all of a sudden he says to me, he goes, Denise, what step are you on? And you need to call Debbie. And again, the goddess went like sky high. I just brought it to a whole new level. So that was, but you know, we laughed about that later because it was like, you know, he sees this, he sees what's going on. And he likes the new me. You know, he knows, Tom knows. the first time I ever said, I said, you know what, Tom? I said, my sobriety comes before you. I said, because if my sobriety doesn't come here in the power of God and my sobriety, you know, you and I are nothing. And he was like, fine with me. He said, I just want, he calls me Sweet Pea. He said, I just want my Sweet Pea back. You know, that's a gift you all gave me, because I sit here and I watch you guys and I listen to you guys, and there's some stuff that I don't know if I could ever do, but boy, I take it to heart, and that's why you're my mentors today, you know, all of you, especially when you're sharing. That's why it's so important to share. If you've got a good, you know, if you got something to say in a meeting, spread the message. We got to spread the message. You bring, I was told, you bring the mess to your sponsor or your network. So they're like sick of me. But I'm able to bring the message into the meetings, and that's what it's about. You know, there's a guy there's a few of us listen to, and he talks about we should be in these meetings celebrating recovery, you know, and talking about God and whatnot, because this is what a lot of this book is about, is to find the higher power. It's peppered throughout the book. I am beyond human aid, and I was, until I found the God of my understanding. Thank God I did, because 2011, I lost my brother to this disease. Okay, now I was like, well, I want to see about the alcoholic death. I'm just going to go out the alcoholic death. I know nothing what I'm talking about. Okay, this was God doing for me, you know, what I couldn't do for myself. And I'll tell you what, you guys, I saw my brother, and he's in hospice in New Haven, and his stomach is extended. He's yellower than I was, and he's got atrophy. And his feet and his hands were curling in, okay? This is where alcohol took him. He tried the steps. He was so proud of me. Both him and my sister were so proud of me. They didn't know I was an alcoholic. Because remember, I moved down here. Nobody knew. I hid it real well. But when I told him, I got sober in July. He came, he called me in September and said, Denise, I think I'm an alcoholic. We always knew he was an alcoholic because he acted like one. But, you know, and I knew, being an Alcoholics Anonymous, I could tell, you know, that type of thing. I could call him an alcoholic. Well, I could say Michael was an alcoholic because he did call himself one. But, I saw that alcoholic death, and I just remember going back to the hotel, and I got on my knees, and I was like, thank you, God, for showing me this. Because through Mike dying like that, this is actually his book that I'm using today. You know, he's here. I know he's here. He was real proud of me, and we were able to make amends before he died, and that was cool stuff. And we always got along as kids, but he was one of those. He was hard to, if today, knowing what they know today about disease and whatnot, Michael would probably had ADD. I'm not even sure if I'm saying it right, but he was just that. He probably should have had medication where they could, you know, calm him down. But so my parents had, you know, they had their hands full. I think that's why I was so shy. Not now though. I'm making up for that. So the last thing I want to do, because we're running out of time, and I have an assignment for everybody. I have an assignment. So first thing I want to tell you though is, the beginning of the year, last year we found that my dad had cancer. And this is why I'm standing here tonight, because I need to thank you all and everybody else in all the meetings that I go to, because you, through you guys talking about how you dealt with death and how you've dealt with like the loss of your children, your sober dog, your sober cat, your parents and whatnot, I watched you guys and I listened, because it was through that, and the God of my understanding. God speaks to me through the people in the rooms, and I am a firm believer in that, and I do not believe in coincidences at all. And I knew how to be a good, sober woman when I found out that Dad had cancer. And so I got into motion, and I would go down. He lives in Florida, and my sister took him in. He was in hospice and whatnot. In January, he started taking a turn, and he didn't want treatment. He didn't want treatment. He said, you know, Denise, he was grateful I was sober. He said, you know, I had a good long life. I had a good long life. He goes, I don't want to be prodded and all that stuff. And he did. And May 25th, I was sitting there, and I'm holding his hand, and I got a chance to help him move from this life onto a spiritual journey. And so my dad passed with me holding his hand, and it was the most glorious thing I've ever done. And knowing that it was the hardest thing, but knowing that it was, you know, that's a beautiful man. He was really supportive of everything. He did the best he could. He was just a great man. And I was able to do that, good sober women like you all told me how to do it. okay? And that is, I thank you for that. Today, I realized, so when I got home and all that stuff, I came home and I immediately adopted Big Book Jim. And I said, you are now my father. Because, and his wife is my mom, because I'm an orphan now. And that's all I could think of. I'm an orphan. But what this program also told me is I might need some outside help. And I've looked into bereavement classes because of that orphan thing. And so I have all of you to thank for that. And I'm going to end with this. Okay, this is from As Bill Sees It, not this Bill, but it could be, huh? It could be. It says, can we choose? Yet we finally did make the choices that brought about our recovery. We came to believe that alone we are powerless over alcohol. This was surely a choice, and a most difficult one. We came to believe that a higher power could restore us to sanity when we became willing to practice AA's 12 steps. Okay, that's a promise. That's a promise, you guys. This book is loaded with promises. And I was told you need to put a lot of action into it, and that's I had to. If I just read these steps off the wall, I'm going to get off the wall recovery, and I don't want that. I want good, solid recovery. And so I have an assignment for you guys. And I know pretty much a lot of you. So, and then if you're willing to do something different, I got an assignment. Tonight, after the meeting, okay, before you get in your cars, okay, before you start smoke a cigarette or anything, after you get your paper signed, before you get in your cars, I want you all to get on your phone. And I want you to call someone real quick. Just say, hey, I was thinking about you. How you doing? That's it. Okay? Don't text. If you call them, leave them a message. Okay? Or if you want to text, that's the last resort. I'm not trying to get my sponsees out. They text and stuff. But, if it works, and then just leave it there. Okay? If they answer the phone, have a small conversation. Now, then after that, I want you to go home before you go to sleep, kind of if you go into your 10th step, kind of review your day. I want you to write it down, who you called and how did you feel? How did you feel doing it? Okay? That's all I want you to do. And I know your names, and I can find out. Because a lot of you guys are my mentors, and I might not know your name, but man, I know who you are. And if you see me, come on over and tell me. Come on over and tell me, because about your assignment. I would love to hear it. I really would. And it also show that you're willing to go to any length if you want to stay sober. Okay? And then I'll end with this. Alcohol is a subtle foe, and it is more powerful than me. Always! Exclamation. Always! Exclamation. Always! Exclamation point. So with that, I bid you all a beautiful evening, and I thank you very much. Happy sobriety.